This is Sumati Rajput from the Crisis and Disaster Risk Finance Program at the World Bank Group, and you are listening to Women in Risk Finance, a podcast series dedicated to women around the globe working toward enabling faster and more reliable financial response in countries affected by climate shocks, disasters, and crises. Today's special episode is to mark International Women's Day for 2025. In today's session, we turn our attention to Malawi, a country that, like many others in Southern Africa, faces increasing climate-related disasters with recurring floods, droughts, and tropical storms. Recent events like the El Niño-induced drought, Cyclone Freddy in 2023, are stark reminders of the country's exposure to extreme weather events. Despite these challenges, Malawi has made significant strides in strengthening its disaster risk finance approach. Starting with the CAT DDO, which is a catastrophe deferred drawdown option, launched in 2019, the country has added many instruments to its DRF toolbox. Of note is Malawi's cash transfer program, which has been enhanced with a $21 million grant from the Global Shield Finance Facility to scale up assistance during climate shocks. To tell us more about Malawi's program, we have with us today Chinsisi Firi, an economist in the Debt and Aid Management Division at Malawi's Ministry of Finance. With 8 years of experience in implementing development policies and five of those dedicated to disaster risk finance, Chinsisi has played a pivotal role in shaping the country's financial preparedness for disasters. Under her leadership, Malawi has mobilized a portfolio of DRF instruments valued at over $300 million, integrating scalable social protection, agriculture insurance, and contingent finance. Chinsisi, before joining the Ministry of Finance, worked in roles at UNDP, where she played a pivotal role in coordinating development cooperation among the government, development partners, civil society, and the private sector. Chinsisi, it's very, very nice to have you with us today, and particularly special for me since we worked together with Betty Ngoma on the country's first CAT DDO in 2019. So I'm really glad that our listeners get to hear your experience today on this special episode for Women's Day.
Thank you very much, Sumati, and hi to everyone else. It's really great to be here, to have this opportunity to share our experience on disaster risk finance in Malawi. And really, I hope you get a taste of how the capital helped us after you did all the work from the bank side.
That's great. We're very excited to hear from you. So perhaps to get us started, it would be great if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your professional journey in disastrous finance, particularly what motivated you to work on this topic.
I started working on disaster risk financing after I transitioned from my role working on development cooperation in Malawi, enhancing its coordination. And coming into disaster risk financing, this was my first assignment when I got on the desk of resource mobilization. I remember this was a very new topic to most of us in the division, and everyone was just trying to understand what is this all about. But once I got on the desk and getting support from team from the World Bank, I started to understand what disaster risk finance is all about, what it is for a country to be proactive rather than reactive when disasters occur. And since then, coming from a country where we've been facing a lot of liquidity challenges. Resource mobilization is not an easy thing. The fiscal space is tight for a number of years, and this has just become a very special topic for me, where I believe that it's one of the critical components that government should have in place in order for it to also sustain its fiscal position.
Thank you, Chinsisi. And you make very important points about the role that pre-positioned finance plays in order to maintain a countries' fiscal stability when there are shocks like the kind of shocks that Malawi faces. And here, perhaps, let me turn to ask you a little bit about Malawi's approach as a whole when it comes to responding to severe climate shocks like the El Niño-induced floods and droughts. Often these events have huge impact on, of course, the fiscal side, but also drive food insecurity issues. So how has the country responded to these events? What has been the country's approach when it comes to pre-positioned finance? How has that evolved over time? And what are some of the key priorities for disaster risk finance that you see?
Well, indeed, Malawi has faced significant challenges due to severe climate shock, and the agriculture has been devastated, and it has led to a widespread of food crisis. But mainly, traditionally, the country has responded to these events through emergency humanitarian assistance, where in the immediate aftermath of climate shocks, Malawi has relied heavily on development partners and the NGOs to come in to provide food assistance, emergency shelter, and health services. But we've also had another angle on agriculture support and recovery programs. You're aware Malawi is highly dependent on agriculture, and the severe climate shock has led to a destruction of crops, livestock, and the agricultural infrastructure. And to address this, the government and development partners have provided support in the form of input subsidies, fertilizers, and other farm inputs to help the affected recover from such crisis. But in another angle as well, we also have social protection programs. The country has increasingly turned to social protection mechanisms like cash transfers, food aid, and work programs to support vulnerable populations during the times of crisis. These programs are often targeted to the most affected households, in particular in the rural areas, to provide immediate relief and building longer-term resilience. And we also have highly depended on what we call the vote of the unforeseen, which is a budget line that specifically allocates funds for any unforeseen circumstances. That's the 2% of the total national budget. And this is just for any unforeseen event. So when disasters occur, a portion of this can be used to respond to disasters. And most of the times we've highly resorted to budget reallocations during these times. So you can see that the response process has really been evolving from traditional ways of responding. Now you can see things like the social protection programs coming in. We're now becoming more like proactive rather than reactive. Malawi's response now is coming together by what we call the disaster risk financing strategy. And this strategy has helped Malawi to bring together a portfolio of pre-arranged instruments, such as the social protection programs that I mentioned, agriculture insurance. We have what we call the catastrophe deferred drawdown option, which gives Malawi an ability to access funds under the World Bank in a very short period of time, and we're able to just disperse these funds within some days. And in terms of priorities for disaster risk finance in Malawi, it is quite critical at this point, in as much as the foundation has been laid, with all the instruments coming together, a lot still remains to be done. So one of the priorities for Malawi is to enhance the risk financing mechanisms. Now, I would like to mention that for the disaster risk financing strategy, this was from a period from 2019 to 2024, and this has phased out. But now government is reviewing this strategy to develop a new strategy that is more enhanced to coordinate this portfolio of prearranged instruments and to make sure that response is rapid and timely. Apart from that, there are also investments in improving early warning systems and data. This includes improving meteorological services and data collection, as well as building capacity to translate data into action risk management plans and ensuring that these systems are accessible to vulnerable communities, especially the farmers. Another aspect I would also say, there is a strong urge now to bring in the private sector. As you're aware, the international aid architecture is now changing. We're seeing how things are happening with the USAID. UK is bringing in something else. The resources are dwindling at global level, and now it's for countries to explore new ways of leveraging financing sources that are existing out there. So private sector engagement is also one of the priorities. And Malawi is looking to engage the private sector in disaster risk financing to enhance instruments such as the insurance and the provision of enhancing agriculture production activities. Strengthening this partnership between government and the private sector can lead to innovative solutions for risk financing and disaster recovery. And it would also help us to explore ways of better financing infrastructure resilience. And through that, as well as the social protection programs are now changing, they are transitioning in response to what is arising in the modern times that we're living in. We're thinking that things like scalable social protection could also be linked with maybe some disaster risk financing instruments that the private sector could be able to offer, like the insurance, as I mentioned. And with that, we just continue to also invest in the ongoing climate change adaptation investments. So those are the key priorities that are currently on the table. And just one more thing to mention that the government also plans to invest in comprehensive analytics for incorporating disaster risk finance in economic and fiscal risks assessment so that we have financial frameworks that are well informed when it comes to disaster risks management and financing.
Thank you, Chincici. That is such an inspiring picture of what Malawi as a country is doing to enhance its financial resilience. You know, you started your response with a focus on how you were pretty much reliant on humanitarian assistance, and then you've made such proactive efforts to build essentially expertise on the technical side, but also on the financing side to be able to move towards more proactive risk management and risk finance. So it's certainly a very, very inspiring story for many. And I picked up on some kind of key themes from your intervention that perhaps I'm going to dive deeper into through the rest of our time together. One would be around, you know, you emphasize the role of the DRF strategy that you initiated, which really talks to kind of setting up the institutional framework, so really around regulations and making an enabling environment for specific solutions to be in place. So I will pick up on that point. The other point that I will likely want to talk to you more about would be on shock-responsive social protection. And you started talking a little bit about your forward-looking priorities, but I'm going to come back to that at the end. So maybe to pick up on the first point, I mean, what role essentially regulations have played, you know, in implementing your DRF strategy and implementing the solutions that have emerged? And, you know, what are some of the reforms that were undertaken, and how has that strengthened sort of your approach to implementation of solutions in the country? So perhaps we can start with that.
So basically, the main framework that is bringing us all together, should I say the policy that is bringing us together, is the Disaster Risk Management Act, which was approved in recent years. And this has really brought about a big change when it comes to talking about issues of disaster risk financing, not just talking about them, but also the coordination of how this should be implemented, how disaster risk financing should be implemented. On the Ministry of Finance side, since we are the ones coordinating the implementation of disaster risk financing, one key framework that holds us together is the Public Finance Management Act, which mandates the Secretary to the Treasury to be the champion of all financing issues in the country. And this has really helped to ensure that we speak in one language. And now this is where we've really had that opportunity to disseminate what our strategy is trying to achieve at the end of the day. But one of the major reforms that have also come up in addition to the DRM Policy and Act is that within the Act, there's a provision for the establishment of the Disaster Risk Management Fund. And the government has also recently approved a new Malawi social protection policy to support its shock-responsive social protection system. And this policy establishes the Malawi Social Protection Fund with disaster risk financing instruments and incorporates social security support. The government is also currently finalizing the Disaster Risk Management Fund regulations to operationalize the provisions of the DRM Act. It's also developing the shock sensitive social protection strategy to guide management and provision of the shock sensitive social protection programs while incorporating the disaster risk financing tools. I hope this is giving a full picture. I hope you're able to capture the full picture of our setup. Sumati, does that address the question in full, or do I need to go further?
No, it's a very good overview of your institutional setup, and in fact quite advanced, because most countries still working towards a setup where they can have something like a Disaster Risk Management Act. And I know that this was also something, in fact, that was initiated during the time of the CAT DDO. So I think it takes a lot of time, right, to actually push these reforms at the institutional level. It's very difficult to get this through. And I think Malawi has made steady progress clearly from then to even now in terms of specific focus on the social protection side. I was curious if there was anything that you talked about the shock responsive social protection side, you talked about the DRM kind of act overall, and how that coordinates the DRF space and is enabling kind of some of the new mechanisms. I was curious, since you talked in the previous response about private sector, whether there's anything that, any reforms that have taken place in the domestic insurance market, for example, that have contributed to or may contribute to more uptake of, insurance instruments in the future.
In that aspect, really, I would say this is still work in progress, because this is where we are now just bringing all the pieces together, where we're trying to make sure the Reserve Bank, which is responsible for coordinating the insurance companies, they have the coordination framework as well on their side. Now, what we're doing from the Ministry of Finance side is coordinate with them to make sure that insurance companies are aware of what is existing when we talk of disaster risk financing. What is it, and how can they come in to offer such products to us? So mainly it has been dissemination sessions on what disaster risk financing is, and just bringing that safe space an assurance that if the private comes in, government is also ready to commit. But again, as I have said, this is work in progress, and a lot more should be coming up in the years to come, or maybe by the end of this year, as we are anticipating a few programs that are coming up.
Excellent. No, very, very interesting. It's great that you can see eventually, some reforms coming about in the insurance industry as well, and that you see more appetite, in fact, to effectively implement change. Maybe I'll move on to my second kind of key kind of topic of discussion, since I know that Malawi has in recent years really expanded its work on shock responsive social protection. In fact, there have been, I understand, multiple, development partner programs, including from the World Bank, specifically, the one that integrated also a $21 million contingent fund, and also essentially $11 million macro sovereign instrument that was all financed through this World Bank program with the grant from the Global Shield Finance Facility. So it would be interesting if you could talk a bit about how this program came about, how it works basically. And also, I understand there's this insurance mechanism linked to it. So it would be great to hear a bit more about how insurance played a role when it comes to Malawi's kind of cash transfer efforts, scale-up efforts, and also touching on some challenges and lessons that emerged from it.
The traditional social protection programs in Malawi have been redesigned to make them more shock-sensitive, shock-responsive, and shock-adaptive. That's firstly, the programs are now designed to anticipate and mitigate the impact of large-scale shock by integrating disaster risk management across the programs. And secondly, the social protection programs are now more flexible. They have become more flexible to be scaled up to provide immediate relief and recovery resources during times of crisis. And in times of crisis, these programs, the social protection programs, can be expanded vertically and horizontally using the DRF instruments like insurance. This actually ensures that existing beneficiaries get additional resources to be able to meet their basic needs, while additional beneficiaries are taken on board as more people fall in need of assistance as a result of the disaster. And thirdly, this redesigning has brought about an integration of aspects of resilience building for populations to adapt to changing risks and vulnerabilities. For example, beyond the cash transfers program now, we have the livelihood support program that trains communities in financial literacy, business management, so that we encourage village savings and loans to enable the beneficiaries to engage in small-scale businesses that can sustain their livelihoods. And within the programs, we also have the component of climate smart public works, which is focusing on environmental conservation, landscape restoration, and soil and water conservation, where we are deriving benefits which go beyond addressing individual vulnerabilities by reducing risks and the impact of shocks to the broader community level. Now, this is where it all came about, changing the traditional program, social protection program, to making it a scalable program. And that's where we're able to access this grant from the Global Shield Finance Facility, the $21 million. Which triggered some payouts using insurance, through insurance. And these insurance payouts were mainly used to scale up the social cash transfers, which have included urban social cash transfers to the vulnerable households, which were affected mainly during the time Malawi faced the Cyclone Freddy. This really helped to alleviate those immediate impacts that these households faced at that time. And the greatest lesson that we learned during this time was that there's rampant urban poverty. And in fact, the extent to which the urban poor are affected by disasters is equally, or maybe to some extent even more, as compared to the rural populations when they're affected by disasters. And excluding the urban population in these programs was an area that was overlooked for a long time, but now it's really pleasing to see this transition within these programs. So in terms of challenges throughout this experience, we've had, I think the main challenge that we saw was the targeting errors that arose during this time, which resulted in some deserving households being left out, while some non-deserving households received the support from the payouts. This was mainly due to multiple targeting approaches that are currently in place. So we have what we call the Social Cash Transfers Program Management Information System, which is expected to enable predefined targeting. And we also have what we call the Unified Beneficiary Registry, which is supposed to enable timely generation of the list of additional beneficiaries to cover. Now, during this time, we found that the districts which were affected, these systems do not have data for those districts, which made it difficult to act in a timely manner and ensure that resources reach the intended beneficiaries to address the immediate effects. So overall, these are the major challenges. So there's a need to do more on these systems to make them comprehensive. As you're aware, Sumati, it's projected that the occurrence of disasters is going to get worse as time goes. And it would just be best for us to prepare ourselves, make these systems comprehensive enough, because we never know which districts they're going to hit at a time.
Amazing. No, thank you so much for again that really interesting response on the overall shock responsive engagements, and also for sharing some of the challenges that you encountered on targeting, which in fact are commonly seen, you know, in many countries who might be listening to this and are implementing similar programs in their countries. And your thinking around making all your approaches comprehensive, coordinated, is perhaps exactly, you know, the right message here for a forward-looking approach. I want to pick up on a couple of points you made, you know, in the past questions as you tell us a bit about the forward-looking approach for Malawi and disastrous finance. You talked in several of your responses about the need to, you know, coordinate and bring together your DRF solutions, so that they are more effective in the way that the country implements its response. You talked about mobilizing private capital or bringing in, you know, private sector solutions to link with efforts in your country. You essentially talked about doing more of all of this, right? Because you see the risk of more and more climate-related events coming in the future. So perhaps with those perspectives, it would be interesting to hear how you see kind of the future of Malawi. Malawi is set to join this large World Bank program, Repair. So maybe our listeners might be interested to hear how you see that in the context of Malawi's disastrous finance and preparedness efforts. And then also maybe what are some gaps that you still see where there's sort of a call for partners to come and work with you on further scaling your risk finance and risk management approach. So over to you, Chincisi.
Well, the future of Malawi in the context of DRF and preparedness looks quite promising, especially in the with the inclusion of the repair program. I mean, the project is
it could enable Malawi to enhance the financial instruments that we currently have. And this is an opportunity for us to further develop the insurance mechanisms that are there, the emergency funds that we're trying to operationalize. These instruments can enhance the overall preparedness position of the country to enable it to quickly respond to natural disasters and climate-induced shocks. But on the other side as well, the capacity building and institutional strengthening that we can access through this program is something that we see as the big thing that is going to be beneficial to the country. But despite all these opportunities and all the advancements that has been made in DRF in Malawi, there still remain gaps, and we feel that development partners could still come in to support comprehensive risk assessment. In as much as the repair program is going to provide this opportunity for us to develop further capacity, there's still a need for us to do more in terms of the risk assessments. But there's also a need to build more capacity, not only at the central level, but now how do we trickle down to the local level, to the local councils? How do we make sure that they are also understanding the implementation of disaster risk finance? And development partners could also come in to help us. As I mentioned earlier, there's the issue of the private sector. How can the private sector come in to offer us the right products when it comes to issues of insurance? Now, how do we develop the insurance market? So if development partners could bring expertise to microinsurance models, for example, and other agricultural products, the index-based insurance to cover droughts and floods, that would be very helpful for our country. And how do we set up maybe public-private partnerships that could encourage private investments when it comes to resilience building? But other than that, how do we take that opportunity of the repair program, as it is offering a knowledge-sharing platform at African level, how do we take advantage of that to bring it down to in-country knowledge sharing?
Thank you, Jinsisi. That is definitely something that we look forward to hearing more about and seeing how this evolves and shapes up. Perhaps maybe a quick question more targeted to our listeners. Is there any message that you would like to share with women around the world working on disastrous finance in emerging economies? Maybe you can inspire them and share what their contribution could do in this important field.
In particular, recognizing women in emerging economies, and with the recognition of today as the International Women's Day, we're seeing that in economies where risks are often intensified by economic vulnerabilities, climate change and inequality, evidence consistently shows that women are excessively affected when disasters occur. We see that the number of casualties is high in women. Their access to essential services and sanitary services is highly impacted, as well as their access to financial resources and systems. They are quite impacted, significantly impacted as compared to men. Therefore, the role in DRF becomes even more crucial for women, because you're helping to bridge the gender gap and the gap between DRF and financial security through the innovative strategies that you're contributing in this space. So I would say this is giving us an opportunity to ensure that no one is left behind. All vulnerable groups are taken care of, and therefore having equitable development.
Thank you, Chinsisi, for that very nice message, calling on women to be strong and resilient, and to pass that on to the world as well, specifically working on this space. So thank you very much. I really appreciate this conversation, and would like to thank you for sharing your candid and inspiring views with our listeners today. It's been a real pleasure speaking to you, and I look forward to continuing the conversation on Malawi's future directions on disastrous finance, which I think the world will see a lot more from you on that. So thank you very much for this discussion.
Once again, allow me to say thank you for this opportunity to take part in this interview. And our gratitude continues to go out to development partners who are enabling women to participate in platforms like this. And we believe that in years to come, the resilience of economies is going to be at a better place than where we are now. Thank you so much. Over to you.
Today's podcast would not have been possible without the contributions of the Crisis and Disastrous Finance Knowledge and Learning team. A special thanks to Anusha Mary Vincent, who helped with the production of this podcast.